She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everyone, to Mrs. Green's World, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. I'm Gina Murphy, darling. Thanks for joining us. And I have said this many times, and just hear the passion and excitement in my voice when I say it this time. Get ready for another amazing show on so many levels. It's about impact. It's about change. It's about thought leadership. And hold that thought and just get ready for the excitement while I give a brief shout out to one of our major sponsors who makes Mrs. Green's World possible, and that is the Chapman Automotive Group. We thank them for their support and for the countless, numerous, and many impactful things that they are doing to make their communities and our planet stronger and more sustainable, and for the major contributions made by their community and green team. They really are doing their share, showing they care in meaningful and impactful ways, always for the greater good. So get ready, everybody. The name of our show today is Perfect Imperfection, and the topic is both fascinating and inspiring. I am so pleased to have as a return guest to Mrs. Green's World, Ben Simon. Ben is the CEO and co-founder of Imperfect Produce. Ben and his partners, Ben Chesler and Ron Clark, started the company a little over a year ago, and their growth has been nothing short of astounding. And I know that I'm prone to hyperbole, but when you hear some of the numbers, you too will join the group of us that are incredibly impressed. Today, just barely 1 year later, Imperfect is America's leading brand for ugly produce. Within the first 3 months of the company's opening, their story was covered by, and get ready, NPR, PBS, NewsHour, NBC, Bloomberg Business, Today Show, LA Times, The New York Times, and the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle. So you know I do not exaggerate. It's safe to say that Imperfect has created national and global interest. And Ben, we really are thrilled to have you back for this hour to share your exciting and important message with our thousands of listeners. So welcome back, my friend.
Thanks, Gina. It's great to be back.
Yeah, there's a long intro now. The intro just keeps getting longer. And you know that I have lots of questions. And I think the first one is, when you started this, and when did it start, your vision for drastically reducing food waste in this country? How big is the problem, and why did you decide that you're going to gather a team to take it on?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the problem of food waste in America is absolutely huge. We waste 40% of the food that's grown in this country, you know, at a time where we have 50 million Americans struggling with food insecurity. It's really just crazy, and food is going to waste all along the supply chain. The first part that I really became engaged in, and that kind of woke me up to the issue of food waste and grew my passion for it, was fighting food waste at kind of an institutional dining level for college campuses, as you know, through my past work with Food Recovery Network. And I'll just sort of share the story for any listeners who are unfamiliar. But, you know, maybe 5 years ago, wow, coming up next month, I was a student with a bunch of friends at the University of Maryland College Park, and we saw a lot of really good food going to waste on campuses and started recovering that food and donating it to those in need. It really, you know, grew into this huge national trend. It's at like 200 colleges now. I passed the torch at FRN this past year. They've got a great new leader in charge, still engaged on the board and stuff. But have shifted over basically when I heard about this issue of ugly produce, of one in five fruits and vegetables going to waste at farm level. So sort of a different issue within the larger issue of food waste that I think is very solvable.
And, I mean, statistics like that, one in five, and literally it just gets looked at and thrown either on the ground and is never picked. I remember the segment that I looked at for... I think it was on NPR, where the cauliflower Some of it was too big, which, like, what does that even mean? And then some of it had a little bit of yellow on it. So it literally just goes there to rot. It doesn't even go on a truck where it gets, you know, put in the landfill. Some of it is just tilled under,
it's
right?
It's just passed right over, and then it's tilled under.
I'm curious to know about what's criteria and how did it start that ugly fruit? I mean, in a very short time, I came from a generation where you wasted nothing to now this massive food delivery system where lots is wasted. Was the genesis of it from where you sit more about the appearance, or was it a combination of the appearance and how it fit in a particular size box? You know, I mean, what were some of the history behind how we got here?
Yeah, you know, that's something that I should really look into is kind of the full history of the past, like, 50 years and how it came from, you know, sort of a World War II, you know, war mentality where we were kind of, you know, all band together and food was this precious thing and wasting food was, like, seen as stealing food from the troops. And people, you know, came together and did victory gardens and different things like that, you know, to, you know, the 90s and the 2000s. And today where, you know, we take food for granted, honestly. It's less of a precious resource. We have such an overabundance of it, in a sense, just in terms of we grow more than enough food to feed everybody in this country, and the world grows more than enough food to feed the whole world. But it sort of loses value somewhere. And with the issue of ugly produce, at least, it's, you know, for the silliest reasons in the world, just like you talked about with that cauliflower. I mean, there's so many examples. It could just be a little bit of scarring. You know, it's all surface-level issues that don't even affect taste or quality. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's just sort of maybe in the absence of, you know, kind of, you know, having that scarcity of resources, I think people begin to take it for granted.
And, you know, I was thinking about it in spending so much time enjoying reading more about your journey and imperfect produce and its impact, and thinking about the literally the pickers, the people that are down on the ground harvesting the produce, and what an eye they have to have, because this makes it and this doesn't, and they have to know size and color and texture, and they're certainly not among the most highly compensated of workers, but it's a skill. It's a skill that I'm questioning if I even have it, because I don't have that sharp an eye. So it was just kind of more of a social commentary, but also quite true. What about, I was thinking also about the, I think part of it is that size matters, because there's a little bit of this room for all these peaches have to be the same size. That was one of the features. All tomatoes have to be the same size, which means some of the quality is compromised because it's picked before it's ripe so that it ships better. And I was thinking ahead for you, do you think that because of the incredible growth that your company could actually impact that process and provide better tasting and more fully nutritious produce to the consumers? And it's doing that, right?
Yeah, well, we're getting this ugly stuff to market. So that's step one is for us. You know, we've started off small, but in our first year, we were already up to a volume of, we're probably doing about, I would say, 300,000 pounds of produce each month that we're recovering. So I think it's making a dent. We're just getting started. I mean, it's kind of a nail it and scale it approach in entrepreneurship, and we're just sort of figuring out the pilot right now. And I think we're at a stage where we're about to start scaling it to the whole state of California, and looking at some other markets beyond that. I think longer term, you know, with Imperfect, and not just us, but there's other initiatives in this space that are trying to make more out of this ugly produce. And get it to market. And it's estimated that it's about 6 billion pounds per year that's currently going to waste. So I think that's kind of the first step, is closing the loop on that 6 billion pounds, getting that to market. I think that is the, you know, most important thing. And I've heard all kinds of different speculations about, you know, how that will sort of change the market in terms of economics and supply and demand and different things like that. And, you know, I think that's good stuff to do, but rather than the speculation, I'm more focused on, you know, how can we just first make sure we accomplish you know, the number one most important thing is just closing the loop.
Right. How can you leap? I mean, that's it. Scaling this has got to be a phenomenal challenge. But it benefits the farmers. I mean, there's definitely an incentive for the farmers. I can't imagine that any farmer is careless or insensitive to food waste. So what are you hearing as, you know, some of the, I guess I'd call it joy and excitement from farmers and the economic impact? It's got to help them financially.
Yeah, and it absolutely does. We've worked with about 50 farmers so far. We work with about 30 on a weekly basis, split pretty evenly between organic and conventional. On the organic side, I would say, is where it makes the biggest financial impact for them, because these tend to be smaller and medium-sized farms in California that we're working with. So, you know, if we can purchase 4 pallets a week, so, you know, maybe it's 3,000 pounds a week, something like that, from them, even though it is a reduced cost from what they would be able to sell their number one quality for, you know, it still does make a very significant impact. We have way more farmers that want to work with us than we're able to work with, unfortunately. The biggest challenge for us is really just growing the demand for this.
And what a great problem to have. I mean, it's pretty exciting to me that you are experiencing this growth. What have been, like, Inside Edition, what have been some of the biggest challenges? I mean, you came from a network, the largest food recovery network in the country for college campuses. I mean, the Food Recovery Network, largest student movement against food waste and hunger. What kind of things were you able to bring from that in terms of, you know, distribution and systems that you have to put in place to get it from the farmer to a Whole Foods, which we're going to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of a distribution standpoint, I think the biggest thing we pulled from is sort of the CSA model, or in a sense, kind of the more CSA 2.0 almost. And I know some hardcore people don't like kind of the appropriation of the word CSA, because it's not technically a CSA, but you're seeing a lot of models. Like, there's a big company called Farm Fresh to You here in California that serves like about 50,000 households a week with sort of an adapted CSA model. They started off as a farm, as a, you know, more conventional CSA. And for any listeners who aren't familiar, that's community supported agriculture.
I was just going to say, there are some people, our new listeners, that might not know what a CSA is.
Yeah, it's just, yes, I'm throwing jargon around. So CSA, yeah, basically when a farmer is selling their sort of a quote unquote share to their farm, and the consumer pays the farmer beforehand, and then, you know, might get 12 weeks of produce, and that's really whatever happens to be in season. Whatever the farmer is growing that week, they'll get a small portion of it in terms of a big basket. So that was kind of the approach that we adapted with Imperfect. That was the biggest thing that we looked at in terms of the distribution model. And what I was getting at with kind of the more 2.0 kind of adapted approach is that you're seeing a lot of companies this year, these days, now that, you know, the internet and software and different technologies enable it, kind of an aggregated CSA approach where you're pulling from a lot of different farms, and you also sometimes are seeing companies give users the option to customize their order. That's what Imperfect does, to make it fully customizable, so you can choose exactly what's in your box each week. And, you know, so it's kind of splits the difference between that old school CSA where you get this rustic farm box dropped off on your doorstep, or that you have to pick up at a community location. Kind of splits the difference between that and a more conventional grocery shopping type experience where you have more choice. So yeah, I would say that's kind of been the inspiration for Imperfect in terms of our distribution model.
And it's a hybrid, which is great. Of course, Mrs. Green loves hybrids, so it's like, it is a great model. What about the cost? Because you are getting it at a discounted rate, I thought of this as like the green trifecta. The farmer wins, you buy it at a discounted rate, and then you're able to sell really good food, freshly grown produce to people. Is it much more affordable than what traditional organic produce is on the grocery store shelves?
Well, I like trifectas. If you like hybrids, I like trifectas.
I like triple bottom line all day long.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, building value in for everybody. And yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do here is, you know, build in value for the farmer, build in value for the environment, and build in value for the consumer as well. So in terms of your question, we do get it for about 50% cheaper than what they would normally sell their premium number one product to a grocery store or wholesaler for. But, you know, it's a lot better than nothing, or getting 1 cent per pound for animal feed or something like that, or 5 or 10 cents per pound. In some cases, there could be a processor market. And then we pass those savings on to the consumer, and we deliver it for about 30 to 50% cheaper than grocery store prices. And we also have an additional program for low-income individuals and families to be able to get a reduced cost box that's an additional 30% cheaper. So that ends up being less than half of what it costs to buy produce in the grocery store.
And hidden in those statements that you just made are some treasures that I'd like to reflect back to you. When you are saying that you're supporting small and organic farmers, you and I know what an impact that makes in terms of food security and food safety. I mean, it's going to become more and more of an issue. So the more local farmers that are healthy and robust and financially viable, it puts all of us at less risk, especially in the areas in which you're operating, which are high concentrations of populations. You know what I mean? It's not like Iowa. I don't want to pick on Iowa, but there's a lot of people in the Bay Area that you're bringing healthy food to and at-risk populations. So that's one of the things that just strikes me.
Thank you.
And makes me, you know, really excited about it. And let's talk a little bit about numbers, because this scaling, this is, I'm so intrigued by that. But you really, literally, last August, started with 150 customers. Fast forward today, how many customers do you think you're serving in the Bay Area alone?
Yeah, so we're up to about 9,000 customers in the Bay. So it's grown tremendously. We're doing about 5,000 boxes per week.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, I want to go. Maybe we can think up a new word, Ben, you and I. Is there a quorfecta, you know, instead of a trifecta? Because the other part is you are employing people. You are, like, still, I'm sure, considered a small business for now.
Wait
till next month.
Yeah.
But the employment factor of people that you're giving jobs to. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that feels amazing. Like, you know, we love our team, and just like this amazing group of people have come together and, you know, to join our team. And, you know, it's really like the most amazing team I've worked with, just such an incredible group of people. A lot of, you know, really young, like passionate people, a lot of people fresh out of college. All of our jobs are a living wage. Our starting salary, lowest wage is $15 an hour. So, you know, we really,
and
we
also awesome.
Give all.
Like, I want to ring the bell. That is a livable wage, not $8 an hour. It's like, stop. And you don't have just young people. I pored over your website. I love those gray hairs too, because you've got the wisdom and the young energy. It's all great. And diversity and, you know, it's a cacophony of color and age, and wonderful to just look at the page on your website that says about us. It's just.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been kind of an interesting journey because actually, you know, so the co-founding team, there's three of us, and, you know, there's me, I'm 26. There's my co-founder, Ben. He is 23, I believe, as our chief operating officer.
I'm sorry,
and
I'm laughing. It's
guy,
like, what?
Our supply guy, Ron, I believe is about 65. Maybe I shouldn't age him on the radio.
Love that, but, man. Hey, I'm 65 and proud of it.
yeah. So he, you know, we have, we use the software Slack to like run our messaging on, sort of within the company, kind of instant messaging during the day. And his username is @fossil. So, you know, he owns it, and it's been this really like fun process of like, you know, people, you know, he's two generations. He's a boomer, you know, and we're millennials, and it's just this crazy mashup.
What a wonderful combination. New thoughts with ancient wisdom is what I call it. We are coming up on our first break. When we come back, I really want to delve into what Imperfect Produce is doing to bring it to bring their ugly produce to the grocery store shelves and their blooming partnership with Whole Foods. Please stay here with me. More from Ben Simon from Imperfect Produce. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
And welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. The name of our show today is Perfect Imperfection. If you've been listening the whole time, you know exactly why we called it that show. And joining us for this hour is Ben Simon, the CEO and co-founder of Imperfect Produce, America's leading brand for ugly produce, 1 year in, okay, everybody? Prior to his founding of the company with his partners Ben Chesler and Ron Clark, Ben was the executive director of the Food Recovery Network, the largest student movement against food waste and hunger in America. So he's doing a lot of firsts and largest. And trust me when I say, there is never a dull moment in the life of Ben Simon or the members of his team. I believe that they're truly dedicated to making a significant contribution, significant underline hashtag in our nation's fight against food waste and in turn against hunger. Ben, once again, thanks so much for being with us. An hour of your day is precious because you've got a lot of things on the list, I'm sure. But just think about how many people listen to this and then know about Imperfect Produce. So let's talk about...
Thanks, Gina. Good to be back.
It's so fun. I mean, really and truly. Let's talk about the Whole Foods partnership. From what I understand, and you told me this when I saw you in Washington in April, which seems like 2 years and then again 2 minutes ago, you were ready to pilot Whole Foods markets in Northern California to get the Imperfect brand in their retail setting, and it's now the largest ongoing ugly produce program in the United States. And I read that and I said, of course it is. So tell us about that, how it developed and what, you know, beginning, middle, and vision for the future. It's all about your story right now.
Yeah, so, you know,
it's a big one.
With Imperfect, you know, what we saw was a problem, and that is that there is estimated 6 billion, with a B, pounds of ugly produce going to waste each year because of these cosmetic challenges, despite the fact that it's a perfectly good product. And honestly, to the untrained eye, a lot of this stuff, you know, people would absolutely eat. So we started with that, and we said, okay, what we really need to do is rebrand this. It's facing a major branding challenge. The growers literally, you know, we're walking the field and walking the pack houses with these growers, and they refer to it as unmarketable product. That's just what they call it. They call it byproduct.
Wow.
A byproduct of the growing process.
And nobody wants to eat a byproduct.
Ugly.
Yeah. Ew.
So it's like, that's, you know, not exactly the, you know, best way to brand it if you're trying to sell it. But that, you know, it's, they've been trained over decades that grocery stores just won't buy this stuff. And so, you know, they look to alternate markets, and sometimes, you know, in Blue Moon, they're able to find a processor, but often they're getting paid pennies on the dollar for that, especially if the contract isn't lined up beforehand. And for a lot of goods, there just really isn't a well-developed processor market. So what we're trying to do is get this product to market, and the first thing we said is, okay, you know, we need to do like a direct home delivery. That's the quickest, most efficient way. And so we bring that to our warehouse and we drop that off on people's doorsteps, and we talked about that in the first portion of the show. And we also said, you know what, we're getting emails from people all over the 50 states asking us, you know, when is this going to be in my market? When is it going to be in my area? And we said, okay, maybe we also need to work with the existing distribution center out there, which is the fact that, you know, like 98% of people still go to the grocery store these days to get their produce. They're not doing e-commerce. They're not, you know, getting direct home delivery of their produce each week. So we looked at that and said, okay, you know, we're not really going to make too much money off of this, but it could be an opportunity to really make a big impact, to get huge. It's going to be very low margin, but very high volume,
right,
for retail, if we can, you know, prove that this can work in a retail setting. So that was kind of what we set out to do. We did this other pilot last year, had some lessons learned, and basically settled on this model that we're now piloting with Whole Foods, where it's a brand licensing model. So we just license the Imperfect brand,
right,
to solve that branding challenge for any grower. So it's a platform for any grower.
Got
it. It's a very small fee, brand licensing royalty per case of produce that they sell to retailers. So it ends up being like 2 cents a pound. And we do all the PR around it. We build the demand for it. We take care of all the artwork. We do the in-store demoing and store checks, all this stuff on the front end to make sure that it's selling. And it has really kicked off with Whole Foods. We started in like April, May, something like that, with just 5 stores in the Northern California area, region of Whole Foods. And we started just with one item, and that was mandarins. And these were mandarins that were not cute enough to be cutie brand mandarins. And, you know, they had just a little bit of scarring on the outside, but were some of the juiciest mandarins people had ever tasted. And, you know, I went out there, I was demoing and talking to people, and they, you know, they couldn't believe it. But the biggest thing that was moving the product was the price. It is really 50% cheaper than all of the other produce at Whole Foods. So for Whole Foods as a company, and they just mentioned us on their company-wide earnings call a few weeks ago, mentioned us twice about an initiative that they're excited about scaling to other regions because, you know, it's really helping them, you know, stay relevant and stay at a price point that, you know, more millennials and younger people who haven't quite made it, or people who just can't normally afford the higher price point of Whole Foods, you know, be able to reach those people without sacrificing,
yes,
any of the social value or any of the sustainability or the story behind it as well. So they're excited. I think they're a perfect partner for us. I mentioned we started at 5 stores. We're now up to 20 stores in the Northern California region. We did 5, then scaled up to 11, then did 20, and we've added a bunch more items, and we're we're ready to roll and just hopefully going to be able to expand this soon to other places as well across the country.
And I already have a great candidate for heading up your Arizona expansion operations.
Is that right?
Said tongue-in-cheek. I know I have a planet to reserve, but I thought, what an unbelievable opportunity to be on the ground floor, which it still is. I think now you're on the 10th floor, but that ride of watching what you're doing. And it's a sweet spot for Whole Foods. It's a win for them as well, because their demographic is definitely the higher end consumer that can afford a higher price point. And this has got to be
right,
something really, really beneficial for them to not only reach the masses, but to serve the need of people that don't have the money to buy the more expensive things. That's my social justice commentary on the whole thing of why it excites me.
Right, definitely. And you know, they're a great store, but it is pretty pricey. And I think that's kind of, there's been some discussion in the national press around that. And I think this is a great way that they can remain accessible for more people.
You know, let's talk about the ugly produce itself. I mean, I am definitely, and, you know, I'm a psychographic, I'm a certain demographic, and I think ugly fruit is adorable and hysterical and fun, and I know that I'm not the only one. I've got an outrageous sense of humor, Some of them are just absolutely obscene and hysterical that you want to have at a party and say, you know, look at this sweet potato. But the other part of it is I did not really fully understand until I've had this relationship with you and the Food Recovery Network as an advisory board member that a little tiny brown line could be on a tangerine or an orange, and it doesn't make the cut. I mean, I don't even notice those things when I'm shopping. So it's like, it's fun. And is that crossing all demographics and all psychographics? Because there is an element of hilarity in this.
Yeah, and we try to have fun with it, and we're having a lot of fun on social media if you check us out.
I have. It's hysterical.
Yeah, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Imperfect, at Imperfect Produce, at Imperfect Fruit, depending on the platform. It's a lot of fun. We one of the things we realized in our first year is that we love googly eyes on produce, and we just you get an eggplant. We've had a lot of eggplants that have like little noses on them.
Right.
It's really weird. I should figure out what happens in the growing process to give it that nose. But you know, we'll get a big bin of eggplants with maybe 500 eggplants in there, and I, you know, like a fifth of them have like crazy noses on them, and truly do look like what is that, Stonehenge?
Yes.
I'm thinking of Easter Island.
Okay, yeah.
That kind of image with these, flat faces and the noses, and you know, we get all kinds of different, like we get potatoes that totally look like teddy bears, and we get carrots that have arms and legs, and all kinds of different things from the, eccentric, like this totally looks like a person, or it looks like something else, down to a lot of the produce, though, is not that glamorous. It's not that crazy. It's just a little bit of scarring on a watermelon.
Like that little brown
little
line on an
discoloration.
Orange. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Exactly. It's not that crazy. It's not that sexy. Like, that's like most of the product that we get, but we try
right.
to... We call them the celebrities, the ones that are like the eggplants with noses, are the ones that are like really good, the VIPs, the very imperfect produce. And we actually, it was funny, we gave all of our customers a little packet with two googly eyes and a card.
Oh my gosh,
and
you're kidding.
We had like 200 or 300 people post pictures on Facebook and tag us with they're like wonky looking produce with googly eyes on them. So yeah, we definitely try to have fun with it.
It's so fun. And think about, it appeals to me. Think about how it appeals to kids that are 6 and 7 and 5 going to the produce department and having fun and actually knowing where your food comes from and making it something that is just added value to the
yeah.
quality of life to me. It's like, this is fun.
What I'll say, Gina, and thank you for that, is that, because I've been in the food waste field for 5 years now, and what I'll say is that, 5 years ago, nobody was really talking about food waste.
Right.
And more recently, you've had this huge explosion of people talking about it, and I won't take the credit for it. I don't think Imperfect deserves all the credit, but I think ugly produce in general has, made a significant impact in terms of this idea of, like, it's just so relatable. It's like, because you have bullies, you have people calling people ugly, and you have this idea of like the ugly duckling and the odd one out, and I think to be able to create sort of like a concept or a meme around that people can really easily grasp and be like, okay, that doesn't make sense for that to go to waste just because it has a nose on it. I get that. I'm going to share that, and it's really gone viral. And what I'll also say is that, like, it can be tough raising awareness about food waste, because like it's one of those things that people are just like, like food waste. Yeah, I don't know, I waste a lot of food. I feel guilty about it. Like, and it's like this bummer, to like raise awareness about it. But I think ugly produce has been this like really cool way of like getting people to have fun with it and let their guard down and talk about food waste and food waste awareness, without feeling guilty.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because you're right. It's just a horrible combination of terms, food waste. You think it smells, it rots, it collects, I don't know what to do with it. If I compost, even that has to me a whole bunch of inconvenient things that go with it, to be quite honest. And I think it's hysterical that I'm taking a group of people today to a composting compound that's put on in cooperation with the University of Arizona, and it's called the Compost Cats, and local food restaurants that are partnering with the University of Arizona and these students to do composting. And it's like, well, it's 105 degrees, so I think I would have been happier in November, but it isn't something that's a lot of fun. But this whole team wanted to go out and see what happens to the food waste they're collecting hundreds of pounds of a week. So that's a little bit of a sidebar, but definitely a shift in terms of the awareness. And I don't think we're going to see anything that's going to be super fun as it relates to food produce, but whatever. So let's go back to the growth. Is this, as a businesswoman, intrigues me. So you doubled in size from June to August. And like you said, you went from 200,000 pounds to 300 pounds of produce per month. Your plans for expansion, you want to address every address in California, go to Vegas, Reno, Nevada. How are you picking those places? Who's kind of driving the ship of expansion, as it were, among the partners? It's a big thing to take on, Ben Simon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's such a big move, you know, when you decide to expand and when to expand and where to expand and how to expand. I mean, these are huge questions, and it can be so dangerous as a startup if you say, okay, we think we've got it. And we're getting some pressure from our investors, or we want to seem like we're really growing. So let's expand. And a lot of companies expand prematurely. And in particular, in this space, there have been a couple companies that probably did expand prematurely, and they had to then close down those offices and lay off tons of people. It's tough. It's a tough line of business to be in the e-commerce grocery space.
Yes. Yes.
But, you know, we feel that we're ready. We're actually just on the cusp of reaching profitability already, so we're kind of bucking the trend in
Unreal.
Terms of that.
Unreal.
Yeah, we may have a profitable month next month in September, so that's, like, super exciting for us after just 1 year, just celebrating our birthday. And, you know, most companies in the space don't really break even until year 4 or 5. That's
right.
What their goal is.
If they make it that long.
If they make it that far, yeah. And so we've done it just bootstrapping with almost no money. So it's been, you know,
it's
a
phenomenal.
Fun first year, crazy first year. Yeah, it's been fun.
But the thing is, the supply is there. The demand, obviously, is there now. So you have to be able to create, you know this, the mechanism to have the supply meet the demand and all that expansion implies. I mean, it's major.
Right.
Are you really, let me put you on the spot right now, are you really planning to come to Phoenix and Tucson?
We are, yeah. By this time next year, we will be there.
That's thrilling.
Thrilling
to me.
Yeah, we're actually, so as you mentioned a moment ago, we're expanding throughout the state of California to every address in California on December 1st. And
wow.
The way we're able to do that is through this regional carrier that they basically do like 24-hour ground shipping. And like a lot of wine companies use them in California,
right.
And a lot of different food companies that will cause us to put an ice pack in the box, which I do have some mixed feelings about as an environmentalist, but just in terms of the cost-benefit analysis of getting
you
to reduce,
do it.
You know,
yeah.
12 pounds of produce waste for an ice pack. You know, and it's not the 5 ice packs and like crazy liners and like all the packaging, individual packaging that you'll see in like a meal kit delivery service these days. So it's not that extreme. So we are able to ship to every address. We're just kind of finishing up the packaging tests right now, making sure that it kind of makes it through the heat of the desert in Southern California. That's like the big obstacle is just getting the packaging exactly right. But we think we can do it. And in terms of who's doing that, my co-founder, Ben Chesler, on the operations side. He's just like an operations genius, and he's like, it's crazy to just watch him work. And so he's really taking the lead on that. And so we're doing California, every address in California, every address in Reno, and every address in Vegas December 1st. And then we're eyeing Tucson, Phoenix, and Flagstaff as our next markets, also through...
Hold that thought. We have to take a quick break. Everybody stay here with me. I'm hanging on your every word. I'm sure our listeners are too. We'll be right back with Ben Simon from Imperfect Produce.
Mrs. Green's World's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World. Thanks so much for being with us. The name of our show today is Perfect Imperfection. Joining me for this hour is Ben Simon, one of the co-founders of Imperfect Produce, America's leading brand for ugly produce. And please note, if you just joined us, this is a company that is 1 year old. So they have turned from zero to 12 months, America's leading brand for ugly produce. It is Imperfect is a social venture that gives consumers the chance to buy delicious, wonky-looking produce, and I'm sure I took that directly off something I've read, at a 30 to 50% discount, making healthy, whole, fresh foods available for many, many more people. Started a little bit over a year ago, Imperfect Produce has grown its customer base from 150 to, I'm just going to say, a bazillion, because that's what it's going to be. And that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Just in the Bay Area, they recovered over 700,000 pounds of produce, and it's growing every day. The numbers are almost insignificant in that they continue to change and grow. I invite you to follow them on Facebook and Instagram at Imperfect Produce, and on Twitter and Pinterest at Imperfect Fruit. Ben, thanks for being with us and for all of this inspiring and inspirational content about just a good news story when our world so desperately needs good news these days, at least from where I sit. It's great to have
Thanks,
news.
Gina.
Yeah, it's
and
really.
And thank you for being the one to broadcast it.
It's just so fun. I've been looking forward to the show since I saw you in April. Okay, so when you go to a state like Arizona, and I would love to be covering a show again when that happens, and maybe have some of your partners in studio here with me at our national headquarters. But what do you, who are you partnering with? Do you go directly to the farmer now that you have a system in place? Where do you start when you're, you know, moving towards going to another state?
Yeah, so, you know, in terms of supply, you know, we are kind of going to split the difference and both draw on the supply chain that we've already built in all throughout the state of California.
Right.
And then also look for more local supply chains as well. It's a little bit different process than like a typical process because it just sort of takes a little bit more cajoling and kind of like networking your way in to get farmers interested in this and get them to understand and get testimonials from other farmers, because it's a very relationship driven business. And so, you know, we're kind of going to sort of have produce coming from California and Arizona and kind of a combination of other states in the region. We're also looking at Nogales as a potential opportunity.
Yes.
I know I've seen some media coverage on a lot of food waste that's happening and just like crazy surpluses there
as
it enters the country. So I think that could be a big opportunity for us as well.
And I'm saying this on the air, I have so much more social capital in Arizona than I do in California. So just invite your team members to reach out to me and perhaps shorten that learning curve. I'm very involved with our local first chapters, and we're doing the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, Bali. We're having an entire farm to chef, a big, big conference in September, big for Arizona, with about 250 chefs matching them with farmers. And Ben, you know
that's
this.
That's big anywhere.
It's
that's
big.
Awesome.
I mean, it's big. We're so
that's
excited.
Great.
And I don't know if you know this, but I certainly tout it. You know, Tucson is the only city in the United States that has the designation of a city of gastronomy. And people think it's because of our restaurants, and it's so much more robust and intricate and expansive than that. It's not just about good places to eat. It's about our whole entire food supply system. So I offer my help as you move
awesome.
Into...
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate that.
I know some of the best people, Ben. Seriously. I mean, even as weird as it may sound, some of the leadership at our YWCA that are just doing unbelievable things with local farmers and, you know, people that at risk for employment and underemployed. It's amazing. So I can plug you into a really great network that's robust and ethical and full of excitement. So I can't
great.
Wait
yeah,
for
thank
that.
You for that. Yeah, I'll reach out then and you know, yeah, that'd be awesome. Come back on the air, give everybody an update a year from now.
No, it'll be so great. It will be so great. And it's really not a year. It'll be here before you know it. I want to talk to you a little bit about our venture. This is off the wall question, but something I'm always interested in as a businesswoman. Is there more interest from angel funders and social venture partners and even venture capitalists in funding something like this? I mean, that has all of its downside as well in terms of giving up control and all of that. But some of the investors out there are ethical and want to put their money to good use for the greater good. What has been your experience in that?
Yeah, so we have gone that route to get outside investment just so that we could, get the capital to, sign the 3-year lease for the warehouse and bring on employees and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's the route we've taken. And we have found the most luck with angel investors, so smaller investors.
Right.
The typical check size was around 10 to 15,000 for our first round, so like pretty low. It was like a lot of different people. We ended up raising about $600,000 for our first seed round, which closed out this past January. So that was awesome. We just got this like awesome eclectic group, and a lot of them have come back in it to join this next round of investment that we have just opened up a month or two ago. We're currently raising $1 million kind of as a seed plus round, as just like a little bit of additional capital to just give us more money to basically invest in marketing, and also give us the operational capacity to open up new cities as well.
And it's really, it's just another interesting expansion. I mean, I have experience with the venture capital route, and there are people out there that really care about your mission and want to see you succeed and not come in and out and have an immediate exit strategy or go to an IPO. So it's encouraging to me and not at all surprising. I mean, in the past 10 years, I've come across some really amazing people. Let's switch for a minute, if we can, because the time will fly, about corporate culture. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for the kind of person you are and the pillars that matter for you and the people that founded it. Is there a way to grow and expand and try to maintain the company's core values and sustain not just the growth, but the quality of the growth? I think that's a huge challenge.
Yeah, it definitely is a big challenge. And for us, so we have 20 full-time employees.
Wow.
And we have pretty slowly, kind of progressively brought people on. And one of the things that we kind of made sure of early on is that we really do invest in, in the culture. When it was just me, Ben, Ron, and, the first 3 or 4 other employees, we made sure we had fun. And
yes.
We made sure there was open communication.
Yes.
I would describe our culture as just yeah, kind of a combination of kicking ass and having fun. And we just, like, you know, it's pretty casual, no dress code really, you know, just casual. And a lot of people hang out with each other on the weekend. They go on trips together. People are really, really close. It's just like a really warm, like open environment. And I think our office has also shaped that. Let's just say our office has brought us closer together. It's a very small office. A lot of people brushing elbows as, you know, we're jamming out on our laptops together. And, you know, it has its downsides, definitely, when there's, like, a conversation that kind of needs to be private, but there are no private offices.
You're trying to say, "Be quiet." Oh,
yeah, but what we've done with that is, like, we just go on walks around our neighborhood. It's awesome. I mean, I'm a recent transplant to California, and I love the sun. It's beautiful, and it's just, like, awesome to have that, like, only good days, basically, here in the Bay. And, yeah, we just go on a lot of walks around, you know, for our weekly check-ins and different things like that. And it's really out of necessity because there is no office, private offices, but it's, I think, become like a really nice thing that kind of sets the tone for the culture.
And I am sure there's a lot of fun. I can say that. You know, I just want to reflect back to you, and I hope you'll pass this on. When I was just testing the line from the studio to call in, you can tell so much about a company from what I call their front door. And whoever answered the phone, she said her name very quickly. It might have been Liz. I'm not sure.
Liz.
She was wonderful and friendly and nice and not corporate, which I, of course, like, and was helpful. And, you know, didn't know about this call. I didn't expect her to. And it was just handled so well, and we ended up laughing. I mean, that's one interaction that I think speaks volumes about a company and its culture, and it really
that's
matters.
Awesome.
Yeah,
Liz is the best. I love Liz, and yeah, it's so great. I mean, she works in customer service, but it's awesome to have somebody like that who's just, like, so awesome with customers, and, like, the way, you know, she can diffuse a, it be a sensitive situation where somebody's missing produce in their box and they're calling up because they're mad, and by the end of it, they're, you know, they're laughing together and
they're saying thank you,
awesome.
I'm sorry I got
like
upset.
That.
that's magic. I
mean, yeah,
it's really
exactly.
Magic. It is. There's definitely something magic to that.
Yeah.
What about things, I want to go back, I mean, in this last, I was so focused to get all these questions covered in the first, you know, 45 minutes or 50 minutes, but I want to go
ran
back.
Ran out of material? What happened?
No, I didn't. I'm going back and reading my notes finally because it's so easy and to just, you know, go off on tangents with you. But are there, like, is there something that you're getting the most of? Are there fruits that don't work? Are there fruits that are less wasted? I mean, is that, do you know where I'm going with that? Like, are potatoes, you get a lot of potatoes, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of oranges. What are things that are prolific in your chain, supply chain, and what are things that you wish you could add, but there's not a lot of waste? That ended up being a good question.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, we have a pretty broad selection here. And we take advantage of that. I mean, we've got an awesome network of growers. It's definitely the largest, most developed network of, like, supply chain of ugly produce growers in the country. And, you know, California is just, it's so abundant. There's so many farms in California. A lot of them are just, like, to work with us. So we take advantage of that. And honestly, in terms of what we include each week, I mentioned we might work with about 30 farms each week, something like that. Probably have about 30 different items, 15 organic, 15
right.
conventional.
Right.
We really shape that around the customer. That's kind of where it starts for us each week, is like, okay, what's in season that we can get our hands on that fits the imperfect spec, which means that it's every bit as good on the inside.
Right.
But it's just a little bit funny on the outside. And, you know, that we can get for a good price. And, you know, we call the farmers up and, you know, see what they have, and sometimes they shoot us emails throughout the week and say, hey, I've got a ton of this. Would you be able to take, you know, 8 pallets of beets off my hands? And, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a give and take, I would say.
Yeah, and somewhat of a juggling act, you know what I mean? Because you just have to, consumers have to check in if they're going to, you know, stay on top of what it is they can even get.
Right, that's true.
So do you handle all of the press? Because, I mean, Ben, let's be honest. Let's not play small here, okay? To go, I mean, I picked up a cover, and it's not even in here. National Geographic. That is not in your list. Weren't you featured in National Geographic, or was it Time Magazine? One or the other. Huge.
Yeah. Our Prudy's got to be on the cover of National Geographic.
That's what I thought. I kept
March.
Yes.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yes. So are you the one handling that, and do you foresee that at some point you're going to have a press room? Because it takes a lot of time.
it takes a lot of time, but I love it. I don't foresee needing any kind of press room or any kind of, you know, PR firm or anything like that.
Gosh.
I mean, honestly, like, I've tried press releases, and they never work. I've gotten 0 bites. I've sent out hundreds of press releases. What I've found just works is just, like, shooting reporters a note. And with Imperfect, you know, I shot, I think, 2 or 3 quick emails to reporters about 18 months ago, like an NPR reporter and a few others. I think 3 out of 3 wrote articles on us, and I was, like, it was still in the idea phase at that point. And then just from those articles, other people got in touch with us and new articles came out. And it's just a viral concept, I think. And I think being first to market definitely helps, here in America, just in terms of ugly produce. And yeah, I mean, it's just, there's been a huge demand in terms of the press. Everybody wants their story on ugly produce. It was funny. I was like telling people in the office, I was like, man, we've gotten like every major publication except for Wall Street Journal and The Guardian. And then within the past month, they both reached out to us and wrote stories about us. So, like, the only one left is Time Magazine that I can think of. I mean, I don't know every publication.
It's
but,
coming.
I mean, it does feel awesome to, like, just have people be so excited about our company. Like, that's amazing. So,
that popped into my head.
We love it.
I cannot wait to see Ben Simon on Oprah, because you know that's coming too.
Oprah.
And
all right, I'm adding that to my list.
Let's put Oprah
O Magazine
on your list, and then please, if you have an audience, remember the little people, Ben, who want to come and be there with you, because I so want to get on Oprah. It's been on my vision board for 9 years. So a lot has happened in Mrs. Green's world, but it's so fun. And I want to repeat for everybody again, because we do have a very committed tribe of people that are part of Mrs. Green's world. And I think it's, you know, people follow different forms of social media. And for you, it's Imperfect Produce for Facebook and Instagram. And then on Twitter, it's Imperfect Fruit. So I assume the domain names were taken for those other platforms to have it be changed. And visit them at imperfectproduce.com. It's a fun, informative website. And Ben, you'll just be a regular. You'll be my, you know, Imperfect Produce and Ugly Produce person that we would love to have back on a regular basis, because you'll always have something new, fun, and exciting to share. So I'm glad I have your cell phone number.
Well, thanks, Gina. I mean, you're easy to talk to. I love your show. It's awesome. And I mean, hey, I'm by far not the, you know, most famous guest. I mean, it feels awesome to be in the presence of other guests.
I love
like
you.
Jane Goodall and all these awesome people. So.
Yeah. But I say to
I
invite people on my show with big names and big messages, and you're both. So thank you for saying yes and taking the time. Everybody, it's been a great show. Share it, tweet it, Facebook it, and let people know what Ben Simon and his team are doing at Imperfect Produce, because the world needs more of this. And next week, I've got a great show on my Down to Earth show. It's a woman who's head of the Black Mesa Water Coalition up in the northern part of our state. And for our national show on September 24th, Raminta Jatokas. And I hope I said her name right. She's American Honda's environmental business development leader. And I think it's going to be exciting to hear about what they're doing to help contribute to a healthier, more sustainable planet. Ben Simon, keep me in your Outlook contacts. It's been a great show, everybody. Make it a great green week.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Ben.